on 1116 SEN. Pushing the Burbs with Paul Daffy.
It is Pushing the Burbs with Paul Daffy. Paul Daffy has, for as long as one cares to remember now, been an eminent voice in local football, an eminent pen. Good evening, Daff. We're ready to go with some leagues, others still waiting to kick off.
G'day, Finey. Yes, a few leagues, well, not a few, quite a few actually. It gets more every year, started over the Easter weekend, and all the rest will start this weekend. So it's all underway from now on.
We are looking forward to a very big season right across the board. And, of course, a lot of teams head in with optimism early on. They've recruited. They've got big-name players. It doesn't always pan out. Which teams got off to the best of possible starts last week?
Well, you'd have to... The best possible start, probably in the Ballerine League. Down, they had a full round, actually, in the Ballerine League, of course, for the holiday makers along the coast. Last year, Geelong Amateurs defeated Ocean Grove by 91 points in the grand final. The grand final rematch on Saturday, Geelong Amateurs defeated Ocean Grove by 125 points. So that's another comprehensive victory. Recruit Mitch Day kicked 10 and was best on ground. Also in that league, Anglesey defeated Bowen Heads by 2 points. Port Arlington, who last year finished 9th, defeated Newcombe Power, who last year finished 10th, by 186 points. So Newcombe Power in trouble. Dylan Weir kicked 5 out of 32-33, so they spread their goal kickers around. And a friend of this program, Dom Gleeson, ex-Werribee and Geelong star in the VFL, he's now the playing coach at Torquay. And in his debut as a coach, Torquay defeated Motawarri by 90 points. That was under lights on Saturday night. Aaron Gleeson, I'm not sure of his relationship to Don, but there's a few Gleesons around. I assume he's related. He was best on ground. Matt Deledio, Brett's brother. He used to play at Northcote Park. I presume he's been recruited to Torquay this year. He kicked 3, and Dom Gleeson kicked 2. So there's a bit of action in that league, Finey. And all over, Yarrawonga got off to a great start in the Ovens and Murray League. They beat Wang Rovers by 17 points. Fev kicked 11.
Wow.
Kane Pelter for kick 2.
That's not bad, is it? Well, is he coaching?
He's a coach this year. Yes, he's coaching Yarrawonga. Fev kicked 11 out of 17, so even better. But the Albury, who defeated Yarrawonga in last year's grand final, they defeated Myrtleford by 92 points with Satandra Halpin kicking 6. Satandra kicked 100 last year. So I presume he's still flying down from Sydney. So that's a big effort to do it for another year. And he started off well.
We had some action in the Nepeans and Mornington Peninsula football leagues.
Yes, more beachside footy. Sorrento defeated Dramana by 42 points. That's the biggest grudge match in that competition, certainly of recent years, and they play every Easter. That was in the Nepean footy league. Daniel Grant, best on ground. And Rye, who recruited heavily from Vermont, amongst other places, defeated Rosebud by 19 points. Nathan Henley, best on ground. In the Peninsula League, Pines defeated Seaford by 29 points. Now, that was 7th versus 8th in 2014. But Pines are tipped to rise, not least because of the recruitment of Aaron Edwards from Richmond. He kicked 6 and was best on ground for the Pines on Saturday.
How about the representative football? There was some representative football. We spoke about it last week ahead of number of the competitions, well, all of the suburban competitions going head to head, and of course the big one was Northern Football League taking on the VAFA.
This was I wouldn't say shock, but it was certainly a surprise. Like Northern Footy League, by rights, this is 1v2 in the Metropolitan Championships. Northern Footy League, by rights, should have beaten the Amateurs. Amateurs heavily favoured to win. Northern Footy League were in front all day until into the last quarter when the Amos kicked 3 to get up and win by 5 points. So one of the moves was Coach Cam Roberts moved. He coached Uni Blacks to the premiership in the Amateurs last year. He moved his premiership defender Adam Pitt to attack in the last quarter, and he kicked the winning goal. And then very low scoring, 7-7-49 to 5-14-44. So Northern's kicking let them down as well. They kicked 7 behinds and no goals in the second half. So that was the killer. And VFA kicked those 3 goals in the last quarter to come back. Through Jack Bull of Old Scots, Bede Marne of Uni Blacks and Adam Pitt. And VAFA Vice Captain Brendan Yetzi said that last 20 seconds was the most stressful football I have played. So actually, they found a way to win the Amateurs, Northern Footy League. They just got a bit of stage fright in the end. And they were disappointed without being gutted. Do you think that you'd think they'd be well placed for another assault? We'll have to win the third versus fourth match next year. But Harry Tinney of Old Trinity was the best on ground for the Amateurs. And Tom Sullivan from St Bernard's, a gutsy little rover, he won the Spirit of the Big V Award. The Northern League's best was Greensboro defender Nick Riddle.
Who will the Vaffa be playing next season? Who won 3v4?
All right, 3v4. That was Eastern Footy League versus the Western Region Footy League. Eastern Footy League won fairly comfortably by 34 points, 13-10-88 to 8-6-54. Norwood defender Matthew Ava was best on ground. So next year, the Amateurs versus the Eastern Footy League. And 5v6, the Essendon District Footy League versus the Southern Footy League. The EDFL won by 81 points. So they've given the Southern League a bit of a hiding. 16-13-109 to 4-4-28. Andrew Brown, ex-Richmond ruckman, was best on ground. Adam Yakubuchi, who the EDFL captain, who we had on the show last week, he was amongst the best. And Dean Galea, ex-Port Melbourne full forward, kicked 5. St Paul's midfielder Jared Allen was the best for the Southern. And Essendon League weren't over the moon. They just thought they got the job done. So next year they go back to the third versus fourth. So it'll be Northern League versus the East EDFL. That'll be a good tussle, actually, just to see which one of those is the supreme there. So next year the Western Region League will play the Southern League. So, big day. Two hidings and one really tight and tense match in the Amateurs versus Northern Footy League.
Speaking of the Amateurs, they... we'll have the unfurling, as the Amateurs start this weekend, the unfurling of the flag in A grade, and it's not going to be done by the captain, it's not going to be done by the coach.
No, it's something I hadn't thought of, although when it gets brought up, you think, gee, I don't know. But I had a coffee today with Uni Black's president, Luke Van Kempen, and Luke said, look, a topic for discussion might be who hoists the premiership flag. Who do you reckon hoists it? And I said, isn't it the coach's wife? Or the president's wife, or someone like that. I just remember seeing photos from VFL teams. And he said, yes, well, in this instance, it looks like my wife, Alice, will be hoisting the premiership. So, Alice...
Now, when you say hoisted, it's does it go up a flagpole?
It goes up a flagpole, yes.
Does every club have a flagpole?
I reckon they do. I don't know of a... it's another good question. I don't know of a club that wouldn't have a flagpole. But who hoists the premiership flag? In Uni Black's case, it'll be the President Luke's wife, Alice. And I'd be curious to know who hoists the premiership flag.
One of these days, Alice.
Who hoists the premiership flag at grounds around the country and the suburbs around Victoria this weekend?
9. Actually, we'll do it via the SMS. 0433 98 11 16. Whether it was last weekend, some local football clubs and competitions kicked off over the Easter weekend, or whether it's this weekend, the hoisting of the flag. First of all, is it always done up a flagpole? How do clubs mark the presentation of a premiership flag? And that honour is bestowed upon whom at your club? Would love to just get a cross-section, a range of different premiers from last season and how they marked the presentation of the premiership flags. It used to be very much a feature of the opening round of the then VFL, what has become the AFL, to raise the premiership flag. Of course, I don't know whether did Hawthorn do anything on Monday? The flag is raised, but is it raised by an individual at AFL level?
I don't know. With all the razzmatazz they've introduced in this year, I don't know whether the hoisting the flag got the attention it deserved. I have no idea who hoisted the flag for Hawthorn on Monday. It used to be a big deal. It was a shock when the VFL team, in the opening round, they hoisted the flag the next year and they got done. I remember just thinking, how did that happen? When I was watching the big replay when I was a kid. I reckon it happened at Carlton one year.
Yeah, I remember there's a famous story of the hoisting of a flag, but just off the SMS, if you think the Northern League is the best league, you have no idea. The Eastern League is the best, followed closely by the VAFA, or VAFA.
Yeah, I reckon that's a common opinion.
Might be a common opinion.
But that's not what happened on Saturday.
No, but the Eastern Football League were in third versus fourth.
That's right. They lost to the Amateurs last year, so they get in third, and that's the way it worked.
And Northern Football League...
Who were the fourth-ranked team last year?
Yeah. Apparently Matt Spanger raised the flag on Monday. Is that right? That's interesting.
Because Matt... I was going to say unlikely premiership player. Fully deserved his place, yeah. I went to the Footy Almanac season launch at the Royal Melbourne Hotel last week, and Matt Spanger was the guest speaker because he featured on the cover of the 2014 Footy Almanac. He was fantastic. He's just a very level-headed, very articulate guy who loves his footy, and he would have been disappointed to be left out, but sounds like he's got a bit of a nice reward, really, hoisting the premiership flag.
Yeah. The notion here is that he hoisted the flag because all the other players were out on the field. But
that's true.
But I wonder what happened at your local club. So we know that Matt Spanger let it go from the top of the southern stand, I think it was, at the MCG on Monday in a bit of a ceremony. I love this SMS. You can hire flagpoles. That's very funny. Can we have a flagpole, please?
What, Harry the Hire? He must have everything.
Knocks up a flagpole. So just tell us how the flag was hoisted at your club as we go to somebody for whom the question of who the strongest league in suburban football is would be a lay-down Mazzara. I'm sure he'll say the Eastern Footy League.
Yeah.
Tyson Baker. Got no doubt that the media manager down at the EFL reckons that they're back where they should be playing for top honour next year. Good evening, Dyson, for the first time in 2015.
Good evening, gents. Yeah, definitely happy to get the win. The Western Region tested us early in that game, but I think a bit of height and a bit of grunt got the job done in the second half, and it was pretty comfortable in the end.
Well, it all starts in earnest again this weekend, and what a way to start off the season, Norwood versus Baldwin.
Yeah, Matt Bishop, the operations manager, looked after us here with the fixturing. It'll be a grand final replay, top-of-the-table clash from last year. And, you know, always a good game between these two sides. Obviously, the grand final didn't play out that way, but hopefully with the recruits of both sides who got in, both sides have just topped up and done enough as far as we can see. Some big ins for both sides. So Norwood bring in Essendon VFL player Murphy Ambrose. He was actually one of the best on ground in that VAFL game last year against the EFL. And another player who kicked five goals against the EFL, Brendan Goss, who was also part of the recruit on Foxtel last year. So a couple of massive ins for both these sides, a few more to go. Not too many outs. The only real out that both these sides have had is that Jordan Gisbert goes to the VAFA from Norwood. So it'll be an interesting clash. I think Baldwin are going to be looking for redemption. It's going to be a massive crowd for the flag unfurling out at Mullen Reserve.
Let's have a look at Division 2. And Carl Peterson is lining up this season with, I think it's Doncaster East. That should be a very interesting recruit. They take on Moorabbin, and both of those teams are looking for big seasons and maybe pressing up for a promotion into the top flight.
Yeah, look, this is going to be an interesting one. Carl Peterson, well, he sort of left the Lions on a little bit of unstable ground, but he makes his way across the Heights Reserve. He'll play for Moorabbin this year.
I say he's playing for Moorabbin.
Yeah, so he played with Doncaster last year, left in the last couple of weeks, was originally going to transfer to Fitzroy Stars in the Northern Football League. That was denied, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, through the Paris Harvey connection, he finds his way to Moorabbin. So I think the thing is going to be here whether the reception is a little bit shaky from the Doncaster East players and more importantly the Doncaster East supporters. But hopefully all in all a pretty good game for two sides who are going to play a massive part in Division 2 this year.
Dyson, what do you mean his clearance was denied to Fitzroy Stars?
Yeah, well, he was originally supposed to go there. There's a few different reasons that clubs can deny transfer. I think it was either a money or a jumper situation, which was originally, which was fixed up. And I think he was all set to go there and then all of a sudden must have sort of changed his mind and got in contact with Paris Harvey and Moorabbin Footy Club. And then all of a sudden the transfer came through from Moorabbin. So a little bit of interesting times for three clubs and Carl Peterson himself, but he's eventually found his way to the Mustangs.
All right, Division 3, Dyson. The big game, Sylvan versus South Belgrave.
Yeah, the King of the Mountain Clash is back. Both these sides, obviously, up towards the bush end of the Eastern Football League. Sylvan coming off a premiership last year, head into Division 3 against South Belgrave, the premiers from the previous year. This is said to be a massive clash. These two are becoming rivals over the last couple of years, and it gets none bigger than this. And I think, look, Sylvan should get the job done at home. They've lost a bit of talent. They've also picked up a bit more from across the Yarra Valley. So we'll see how they go round one, because I think that could be a bit of a smoky for the top five in Division 3.
And the battle for the King of the Mountain?
Yeah, look, I think Sylvan should win. You know, they showed last year that they've got that guts and determination that, you know, if they're down by five goals at three-quarter time, then they're definitely still going to make a contest of it. So, Sylvan for mine.
It's going to be in a very emotional first game, home game of the season at Heathmont. Tell us why, and a very special day for the Heathmont community.
Yeah, a former teammate of mine, actually, Simon Minson, passed away last year of cystic fibrosis. He was in Vietnam. The club raised over $120,000 to get him back home and obviously to pay for repatriation costs. The club will be wearing commemorative jumpers this week. They'll be raising money for Cystic Fibrosis Victoria. They're also selling off those jumpers at a luncheon they're going to have. So it's going to be a massive day out there, and I think it's going to be a pretty emotional day for most of the Heathmont players. More importantly, or not so much more importantly, but more importantly in the scheme of season 2015, these are both sides who are probably playing off for that fourth or fifth spot come finals time. So it's going to be a massive day out at HE Parker, and I urge anyone who's sort of not affiliated with the club, if you're looking to get down to a game, make sure you go and support the Jets on what is set to be a pretty big weekend.
Not necessarily the biggest game in terms of the players and the potential of these two teams to win a premiership, but in Division 4, a real heartwarming game. I went to Nunawading last year to watch them play against Sylvan, and little ground there. They really struggled last year, Nunawading. And they take on Donvale, who didn't play at all last season. So great, and I mean great, to see Donvale back. And Nunawading have apparently recruited a few players and will be looking for an early season win.
Yeah, look, we say how important a Norwood Ball and or a Montrose Vermont or a Lillardale Blackburn game is to the scheme of the Eastern Football League, but I think we showed it last year with Dunbar not able to field a side in the AFL that this Dunbar and Norwood game is going to be just as important. They spent 12 months in hiatus. They merged with sort of past merged with Whitesides in the Amateurs. Most of the players that went to Whitefire from Donvale have now come back this year, which is really positive for them. They're young, fresh and vibrant. They're made up of most of the guys that won the under-19 Division 2 premiership a couple of years ago. So they're going to be ready to play footy, and they're going to be ready to take it up to most of their sides in Division 4. Nunawading obviously only won one game last year. They'll be looking to hopefully continue some pretty good pre-season form. They've got a new coach who also brought along with him about half a dozen players. So they've recruited pretty well. To be honest, there's a lot of unknowns about just how good both these sides are going to be. Obviously, everyone talks up pre-season form and everything like that, but I think Saturday evening will tell us a lot about exactly what's going to go on in Division 4, particularly with these two sides.
Great look at the start of the AFL season. Of course, next week we'll be able to talk about results, all the big wins, all the big losses, the close ones, the heartbreaks. Looking forward to another big season, Dyson.
Thanks very much, Ken.
Dyson Baker Dyson. There, AFL Media Manager. Now, just received an SMS from a passionate Port Melbourne fan asking about more VFL coverage on the airwaves. Now, our dedicated VFL show has had a bit of a move. We've got 2 hours of league teams on a Thursday night, but on Wednesday between 7 and 8 o'clock with my co-host Nigel Carmody, who is part of the call team on Channel 7 for the VFL, we'll be having a weekly look at that competition. So with Nigel Carmody ensconced as a leading light of the VFL coverage on Channel 7, I'm going to take advantage of that and lend on his authority between 7 and 8 every Wednesday night. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Daff, the name Jason Cunningham will be familiar to 1116 SEN listeners. He has a segment with the Oxen Marco, My Money.
That's right.
But he's also involved with Pasco Vale, is that correct?
He's an ex-player, now a committeeman.
And Pasco Vale have maybe lent on Jason's authoritative use of money and how to best spend by going on a bit of a spending spree themselves. When we return, Jason Cunningham to talk of Pasco Vale's big off-season recruiting splurge.
On 1116 SEN, evenings with Finey. For Alan Mance, don't lose your pants, call 1-800-ALAN-MANCE.
Welcome back to The Bush and the Burbs. Obviously, when you talk about what the best local competition in Melbourne is, suburban-wise, you're going to get some differing opinions, Def, and we've ignited a little bit of a fire that's currently burning out of control off the SMS.
Yes, the Amateurs
are fighting back.
People, so they're not very impressed at all with this notion that the EFL is the best side in suburban Melbourne.
Read a couple of the responses.
So bored. This is from Andrew. So bored hearing that the EFL is the best suburban league. VAFA has beaten them every time, and VAFA clubs regularly beat EFL sides in practice matches. Now that's, I don't know about the practice matches particularly. But certainly the Amateurs beat the EFL last year in that 1v2 match very comfortably. There was a fire benefit match, I think, after the 2008 fires, and the Amateurs got up in the last, unexpectedly at that stage, got up with the last kick of the game. I think it was a goal from the boundary. There was one other game as well.
The one common theme is fairly close games in these first division encounters. In fact, whenever the Amos play, they seem to always, it's always a fine run thing, isn't it?
Yes. They have a game against the Vic Country combined team every second year, and that is often decided by less than a goal.
Yeah, that's the game I was thinking about. And then also the South Australian Amateurs. I saw there was a close game there and at under-19 level. Just across the board, they tend to like, maybe they're playing to the crowd, but they like, and they often win, but they like doing it dramatically towards the end of the game.
Yeah, they've got a good record of winning the close ones. So there is an aspect of belief there. And we spoke last week about the power of actually wearing a navy blue jumper with a white V on it. That's an intangible which sort of must count for a little bit.
Maybe they would say that in a driving finish.
Right.
The Lily Whites, the pure notion of playing money for playing football for football's sake and gets them over the line.
Yeah, they would. And
maybe the opposite.
Maybe there's something to that.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe the opposition would say, well, hang on, you're all looked after with pretty good jobs. there's different ways to skin a cat.
There's that as well.
Just on the hoisting of the flag, Hawthorn Amos. Mm-hmm. Now, I like their Hawthorn Amos because I went and watched them play their annual game a couple of years ago at what was then Visy Park, the old Princess Park. Park.
They play there.
They have an annual game there for, I think it's to do with male suicide awareness and
yes,
Beyond Blue sponsored the game. They raise money and awareness. Mm-hmm. I was there a couple of years ago and I was presented with a hoodie type wind cheater for being there. And I wear it quite regularly because it's a nice hoodie.
I've seen it.
And people don't read it very carefully and say, oh, I didn't know you Barry for Hawthorn because it's got the Hawthorn Amos. It's got the big hawk on it.
Yeah.
And I'm painted as a Hawthorn fan. You know what? Sometimes I quite like that. Even by proxy, it's not bad to think you're successful. Hawthorn Amos will hoist our reserves flag next week by number one ticket holder Dick Thomas, famous for wearing shorts everywhere, even if it's hailing. Pat from Hawthorn. I like people who wear shorts almost exclusively.
One of the top ones was Robbo, actually.
Jeffrey Poulter's a big short wearer.
Is he?
Yeah, he wears shorts unless it's particularly cold. Being a Tasmanian, he's got a pretty good threshold for cold. Peaky wears shorts a lot, which is quite the sight with his bum bag and tight fitting skivvies.
His boat shoes.
Time now to check in with the Pasco Vale Football Club and a committee member that 1116 SEN fans would be more than familiar with. He brings you the money segment with the Ox and Marco on a weekly basis and has provided a lot of sage advice for our listeners, and I'm sure he's doing a fair bit for the Pasco Vale Footy Club as well. I speak of Jason Cunningham. G'day, Chase.
G'day, Finey. How are you, pal?
Good. How's things on the committee of a local football club. How's that panning out for you?
Well, look, fine, to be honest with you. G'day, Daff, as well. How are you, pal?
G'day, Jason. Good, mate.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting, Finey. I mean, it's the Thursday night for us before our first game. We play in the EBFL, as you're aware, and the first game kicked off on Good Friday between Keilor and Strathmore, and they've done that every year for a while now. And, yeah, we've got our first game this week, and so we're pretty excited. It's been a long pre-season for us, and, yeah, we've managed to do a couple of the right things, and we've got a few recruits, and we're all pretty excited down here at Pascoe Vale.
Jason, has Pascoe Vale ever won a premiership in Division 1 of the EDFL?
No, we haven't. We haven't, Daff. We the last flag we won prior to coming up to Division 1 now, which we call the Premier League, was, I think it was back in 1988, and we were up in, back then it was called A grade, and we were up there for a few years, and we fell back, and I think we were in B grade for about 20 years, which just happened to be the time when I was playing footy up here, and then 4 years ago we won the flag, and so this is our fourth year in Division 1, and it's been, look, Daff, to be honest with you, it's been a bit of a challenge for us previously because we compete with some of the more powerful, stronger clubs. But this year we've sort of galvanised the group and managed to do the right thing and pinch a few ex-AFL footballers. And we, you know, without going the early crow, because, you know, at this time of the year we're just going okay, but we reckon we look all right.
All right, you finished seventh last year. This year you're being confidently spoken of as certainly finals prospects. Now, you mentioned an influx of recruits. Can you give us some names?
So I guess probably the two biggest name recruits that we managed to get a hold of was a guy called Ben Warren, who is ex-North Melbourne forward, who played at Werribee last year. We managed to get him to our footy club, and a young guy called Benny Ross had a good story last year in the AFL system where he previously played for North Melbourne, then went to Werribee for a couple of years, and the Hawthorn Footy Club managed to get him as a rookie, and he played five or so games he got elevated halfway through the season, played five or so games in the midfield at Hawthorn, and did really well, and just happened to work at the practice where I work, and managed to, when he got delisted, said, you know, I'd love to play local footy, and came down to Pascoe Vale, and he's been a really good inclusion because he's a young man that understands that, you know, career is sort of pretty important to him. But he also managed to play with his brother, which is a kid called Michael Ross, who was with us last year, who was on Essendon's list. And because Ben came to the footy club, along came his mate Ben Warren, who played at North Melbourne with him. So, yeah, pretty exciting. And then from there, we managed to recruit a couple of other ex-North Melbourne players because they thought, oh, look, here's a chance for us to give something back to the local community. So we got Daniel Harris, which is a North Melbourne and Gold Coast player, and also Gavin Urquhart. So, you know, we sort of, you know, Daff, you know what it's like. I know I heard you before talking about Barney about your Amos connection. I know that you're, a bit of a Spurs boy, and I've got to be honest with you, that's sort of my second club. But it's good to have these younger guys come back and give something back to the local community. And Benny Warren and Daniel Harris have been amazing for our footy club. You know, they're doing things like helping the juniors out, taking juniors for training. It's been fantastic for us.
And you've actually been able to secure at the one club some of the most confusingly named footballers in the competition because it's been hard to keep a sort of tail on Ben Warren, who played at North Melbourne at the same time as Warren Benjamin, Ben Ross, and then he left and went to Hawthorn, and Ben Jacobs turns up. There's been Daniel Harris and the other Harris who played for North Melbourne down in the forward line, and various riffs on the theme. So I can say this. This is what I do know. I know that Ben Warren is a great pickup, a lively forward player who kicked famously in a season opener for Werribee against Port Melbourne.
Yeah.
He might have kicked close to 10 goals.
Well, look, let me tell you this, Finey. We had a practice match up at Currawa and he had a dirty day and he kicked 6 kicks and 2 fell short. So he had 14 shots on and he had a dirty day.
Yeah, he's got a real sniff for goals and he can pile them on.
How'd you go against Currawa, out of interest?
Yeah, we had a good win. I think we won by about 8 or 9 goals, which was good. They're an O&M side, and we sort of had probably 5 or 6 boys out that day. So, but the good thing about that whole pre-season comp, we went up to Currawa. They're a great club. You know, they
They welcomed us up there. We stayed in their rooms. They fed us night and morning. They're a good club, and it's good to do things. This is the thing, Daff, about local footy, right? I mean, we all want to win and we want to have fun, but it's also about that whole communal, bringing a community together. And, you know, when Coral would do something like that for us, we're more than happy to do something back for them. So, yeah, we had a great weekend away, but we also had a good win, which was good for us. Because, you know, last year, as you guys are probably aware, we did our very best to avoid relegation, and it was only one or two games before the end of the year that we did avoid relegation. And so, you know, things didn't go our way last year, but this year, sort of things have fallen our way, if you like. And so, you know, and it's not just those boys. We've picked up a young boy, Nathan Curlow, who's a big fella in the ruck, who's going to do some amazing things for us, which excites us. Mm-hmm. We've also picked up a couple of big, strong boys. And I reckon that local footy is all about the big boys. If you can get a couple of big, strong, solid units around you, then the other boys stand a bit taller, if you know what I mean.
All right, so that's 8 or 9, maybe 10 players. So
we just named the side. We've got 13 new players in our starting 18 that didn't play at our club last year.
All right, so the question must be asked, did you pay a lot of money for these blokes? And if so, where'd you get it from?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, no, we didn't, because we are one of the smaller clubs, so we don't have money hand over fist. What we try to do is we try to pinch some ideas from the AMOs and provide people with careers and life after footy.
Awesome.
And we try to provide a communal type environment where we could help people out in other ways. And so, yeah, our budget would be less than half of some of the bigger clubs, but really? We managed to provide an environment which culturally we think fits with these guys. And we're just very fortunate that a few of these bigger name players happen to play footy with each other in a previous lifetime, which just happened to be the AFL. So we're quite fortunate in that aspect, if you like.
So bring on game one. Who's the round one opponent?
We've got Avondale Heights. They've got a couple of really good players. Their forwards, Rose and Galeo, are quite very... they kicked 80 goals each last year. They're very handy ex-VFL footballers, but they've also got a couple of strong guys in the mid that go okay. We're the big V jumpers, and it'll be an interesting game for us to have a light royal crack. They're sort of touting that, you know, the stronger clubs like the Strathmore, the Green Vales and the Abbas are sort of 1, 2 and 3, and there's talk that maybe us and Avondale might have a fight out for that fourth position. So quite an interesting game for us to start the season opener.
Good luck. It's a... For Pasco Vale, obviously a season of great promise, but until this team steps out onto the field and we see how they gel, it remains obviously a mystery. We look forward to catching up during the year, Jason, and plot the fortunes of Pasco Vale and other clubs in the EDFL.
Thanks, Fine. Thanks, Dad. Look, got to say, guys, love this segment. And as Daniel Harper would say, Finey, never, ever, ever forget Finey. Thanks, pal.
Good on you, mate.
Thanks, Jason.
We are about to head to the break. We're going to catch up with the Emerald Football Club.
That's right.
And the president of the Emerald Football Club. Is that the Wizard of Oz?
Bruce Rust.
Well, he's the president of Emerald.
Oh, right.
Do you know what the Wizard of Oz's name was?
I don't.
Oscar, Zoroaster, Fadrig, Isaac, Norman, Henke, Emmanuel, Ambrose, Diggs.
That's one name too long.
Well, it's spelled out Oz Pinhead,
right?
The initials of all those names. And he didn't like being called Oz Pinhead, so he contracted his name simply to Oz and then added the Wizard to further pump up his own tyres. So we don't have the Wizard of Oz on, but we've got the Prez of Emerald, the other man in charge of, well, of course, Oz was Prez or Wiz of Emerald City. This guy is just Prez of Emerald Football Club, and there's been some changes down to their home base, and we'll find out what's happened to Emerald's home ground when we return. This is
Australia. Check it out. On 1116 SEN, evenings with Finey. For Alan Mance, don't lose your pants, call 1-800-ALAN-MANCE.
Welcome back to the Bush and the Burbs. I was just explaining to Daff during the break while I was so invested in talking about the Wizard of Oz, or Oz, the connection being Emerald City, the capital of the land of Oz, for those My Vintage, you might have read the Oz books. And our next guest, who is the president of the Emerald Football Club, taking it back to the real world, Bruce Rush. But before we get to Bruce, I've got plenty of things at home that are valuable to me, and I lock them up with Apis padlocks. They're larger industrial locks, are perfect for fences, for gates, or for locking up any valuable article, may they be at home or on your commercial property. And that range goes all the way to colour-coordinated padlocks for backpacks and rucksacks, and we know that kids nowadays go to school laden with books, and they do so with backpacks that need locking up. So whether it's colourful padlocks for your backpack or heavy-duty locks for industrial property gates, think one company and one company alone, Abus. They're the locksmith's choice in Australia and have been thus in Europe since the mid-1920s. If you go to a locksmith and ask for their best, they'll give you Abus. And if they don't, find another locksmith. Time now to catch up with Bruce Rush, president of the Emerald Football Club in the Yarra Valley Mountain District Football League. Good evening, Bruce.
Good evening, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well, and a little birdie called Daff told me that there's a new look home ground for the Emerald Football Club.
Yes, there certainly is. We're playing our first game up here on Saturday after having a season away down at Cockatoo in the mud, so all very exciting. The ground's looking fantastic.
Bruce, it's Paul Daffy. Tell us about, it sounds like you've got a renovated ground. So what, they just get rid of the old one and bring a new one in, or how's it work?
Yeah, basically, it's in the same place though, but they took about a metre crown off the middle and then replaced the whole oval with a one of these new sand-based ovals, which is particularly good surface to play on. So it's great. Shire of Cardinia did all the work for us, and we're very pleased.
And that might be a point of difference in the Yarra Valley Mountain District Football League, because there are plenty of grounds. You just said that you're leaving the mud of Cockatoo for your own sand base and, I imagine, quick draining ground at Emerald.
Yeah, brilliant draining.
There's plenty of grounds and plenty of clubs in the Yarra Valley Mountain Football League that would like to have a similar setup, but it's still probably a competition known in the middle of winter as somewhere for, you know, for mountain men.
For mountain men.
Yeah, because
exactly.
it gets pretty thick.
Snow and rain and a lot of mud. So we're up here in the sand now. It's brilliant.
What have you got arranged for Saturday, Bruce? You're playing at home against Yay.
Yay, first game of the season against Yay. Yeah, so we've got a big game organised. All our past players and support to come back and support the club. A lot of festivities. We're also excited about our third game, which is we're third round. We're playing a big clash against the local rivals, Jembra Cockatoo, on the day after Anzac Day. So that'll be a huge day. It's been supported by the local RSL clubs, and they've had a medallion cast for the player voted best on the ground. So we're all very excited about that.
Bruce, you were relegated last year from Division 1. I imagine being unsettled given the playing away for a year might have had something to do with that. How have you regrouped after that?
Yeah, it was a terrible season. We played our last six games. The last six rounds of the season, we couldn't even train on the ground, let alone play, so we're all over town. But we've regrouped exceptionally well. We haven't lost any players, and we've got a number of past players have come back to help us out now that we're in second division, so we're looking particularly good. It's a shame we were relegated, actually. We would have been quite confident.
You're historically a Division 1 club, is that right?
We've been up and down a bit over the years, but not one of the most successful clubs in the league, but one of the better clubs. Seniors finishing on the bottom, and the rest of our teams, basically football and netball, we're a football and netball club. Now, we had five teams through to the second week of the finals, so we came fourth in the league's club championships and were awarded the most disciplined club. So we had a good season, but the seniors and the A-grade netballers didn't do so well. So we've regrouped, and hopefully we can get back to first division next year.
Chatting with Bruce Rush, president of the Emerald Football Club. Bruce, for those city folk that have never been up the mountain to watch some of these teams in the Yarra Valley Mountain District Football League or out through to Warburton, Millgrove and on to Yay, it's a very different footballing experience, and I couldn't recommend it highly enough. Just let our people know our city mice here know exactly what sort of differences and
how we do it. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you do it up there?
We are a football netball club, which is a fantastic thing, and it's, you know, it's been a, you know, relatively recent development with the club. But we also, we have a lot of the ladies involved, and we've just finished a big night, being our first selection night for the season, and we've had all the under 18 mums up cooking the meals, and we've done, I don't know how many meals tonight. It's a, you know, it's been a brilliant night. So
now, what is the meal? Because every club has a different group of what mums and wives stoking the fires. What's the standard feed on a Thursday night?
Yeah, a very, very good menu. But tonight it was a chicken parma and chips,
nice,
with a bit of ice cream. So ice cream and lemon meringue dessert.
Dessert. What's going on in Emerald?
Dessert with a drink. Great. They're a great bunch of ladies and. Now we're looking forward to a positive year. We've also got great support from our local traders and tradesmen and traders, and we've got a major sponsor on board this year with Petters Suspension. So they've been a huge assistance to the club, and we're wearing their logos on the back of our jumpers and renamed the oval after it's the Petters Chandler Reserve up here that we play on.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bruce, you've got this U-Butte well-drained oval now. What about the old ground? How boggy did it get?
Oh, ankle deep, generally over the
generally entire, ankle deep.
Yeah, over the entire surface. Had to find a firm spot.
Really, good old fashioned footy. There. And it doesn't happen enough now.
Real slog, yeah.
What was the manifestation of that? I mean, I've seen these grounds that are ankle deep. I saw a replay of a grand final from when Sylvan were in the Yarra Valley Mountain District Football League playing at Warburton, and if there was a blade of grass on that ground, it was lonely because there weren't two.
Warby was a lot better than our ground ever was. That's why they played finals there. So
yeah, well, there you go. So
I think there's some footage from last year. Channel 31 came up and filmed a game that we played down at Cockatoo, and they're coming up again this Saturday. So I think it'll be an amazing difference between the two surfaces that we've had to play on.
Were there ever games that were won, two goals to one or two goals to no goals? Because, getting the ball through the big sticks ain't that easy, ankle deep in mud.
Certainly a lot of low-scoring games, but, not that low, but, around the 9-10 goals sort of games, pretty low-scoring affairs. A lot of very close contests.
I bet your full forward's happy that you're on a fast-draining ground now.
Oh, you should be, yeah.
Who is your football full forward, Bruce?
Well, we've got one of our ex players back from. We've got a couple of options this year. So we've got a bloke, Johnny Mackay, back from Airport West. He's going to play for us. But he's on his honeymoon, and we've got I'm not even sure who it is this week. But big Alex Hill-Eagle, someone like that, standing at full forward. Justin Davis. So we've got a lot of goal sneaks, but. The ball will be coming down a lot quicker this year than it was last year.
Well, it sounds like a great place to get around a local club. Emerald Football Club, new ground, at least new surface. And let's hope all the yays are for you this week and not your opponent yay in the season opener.
Exactly. So we've got a big building program up here as well. So the boys are all knocking up a scoreboard as we speak, because with the new oval, we lost our old scoreboard and our light pole. So we've got some grants from the councils, but we need to find the other half of the money. So we've got a nice new scoreboard going up, and hopefully we can stick an electronic screen on that in the near future, and they'll put our light poles up, and then we've got federal money to build social rooms. It'll be starting this year, and then hopefully we'll get some more money out of council. Well, there's been an indication, or a pretty positive indication, we'll get money out of council in the council budget that'll be released in a couple of weeks to upgrade our existing facilities, because the whole lot's been pretty substandard, but we're happy to take the oval at this point, so we'll get the rest later.
Stuff the Wizard of Oz. I reckon the president of Emerald in the Yarra Valley Mountain Football League gets the job done a lot better than that fictional character. Bruce, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bruce Rush, president of Emerald Football Club, and the embodiment of local football. Working bees, blokes helping out with the scoreboard, a bit of a grant from council or from government, and mums and wives cooking the players a feed on Thursday night. It's what it's all about, why we love local footy and DEF. That's the start of another big year on Bush and the Burbs.
Going to find it, thank you.
Next week, we'll be looking at the results.